Welcome, everyone, and good evening. Welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday evening, May 17th. It is now 8:01 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620. This evening, we have Mike Rivero calling in. We'll be interviewing with him. He's a real live wire. He's one of my heroes. He's a real patriot, and he is a radio talk show host out of Hawaii. But what his program is entitled is What Really Happened. He tells us what really is happening, folks, and you'll enjoy this program. I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. In his weekly newsletter, Andy discusses economic issues and how they affect you. You can also listen to Andy's commentary on contraryinvestorscafe.com. Lastly, I would like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Well, good evening, everyone. I am really excited this evening. This evening, we have Mr. Mike Rivero, a radio talk show host of What Really Happened out of Hawaii, and he will be discussing current issues. In fact, we're going to leave it open, and we hope to get some call-ins because that'll prompt us to know what is on your mind. Our call-in number is 646-652-4620. Of course, you can send in your comments anytime to comments@libertytalkradio.com or your questions. That's comments@libertytalkradio.com. Again, our telephone number is 646-652-4620. Get ready with your fingers on the button, and he should be calling in any minute. I did ask him to call in a few minutes after the hour so I can finish with station identification and the proper introductions. In fact, I was just listening to Mike Rivero in a discussion that he was having with Alex Jones on the GCN network. In fact, he is on the GCN network. Michael Rivero is on the GCN network. And he broadcasts actually 6 days a week. Would you believe it? 6 days a week. I have a difficult time 2 days a week. This is remarkable what this guy has to say. And he also has a commentary with Alex Jones, I think once a week. And it's really fascinating. And what they have to say is so pertinent, but so clear and so logical. It really makes you concerned. If we are not concerned, we are not listening. We are not thinking. We are not alive, folks. We have some very, very serious, serious problems here that we need to overcome. Some of them may be insurmountable under the system we have now. In fact, just recently I was listening to Mike Rivero when he was speaking with Alex Jones regarding the internet and how the internet is the last bastion of massive communications for free speech. And it looks like we may be losing it. They may have the World Wide Web number 2 coming up, which will be something that you'd have to register on and be approved by the government. Now, wouldn't that be nice if all of these radio shows all of a sudden had to be approved by the government? Now, understand, if you are critical of the government, you could be listed as an enemy combatant, which means you go right to jail. You know, they can shut you up. They can put you as an enemy combatant, just like they did in Guantanamo Bay. How about that, folks? Just the same way that Hitler did it, Stalin did it, Mussolini did it. It's the same process. In fact, Naomi Wolf, in her book, The End of America, listed out. She actually spelled out all the steps to fascism, and we are marching. No, we are not marching there, folks. We are running there. Now, Mike is a little late. Last time we had a little problem hooking up, and I do hope he calls in this evening, because if he doesn't, I didn't plan on anything. Mike, I hope you're there. Mike, nope, not there yet. Well, let's see what else we have. what we were discussing, what I'll do is I'll start talking about a particular subject and wait for Mike to call. I'm keeping my eye on the in-calling call numbers here. And as soon as he pops up, I'll interrupt what I am saying and get him on the pipe. Right now, you know, people are really excited about this new program that the government has of Going Green and how Going Green is really going to help America create jobs and make America clean and productive again. And nothing, folks, nothing, absolutely nothing could be further from the truth. Let me give you an example. Going Green means that we would have wind farms out west that would be generating electricity for people on the West Coast and the East Coast. I shouldn't say out west, in the mountain area, like Arizona and New Mexico. And they would have to be generating power. Just think about this, generating power for the East Coast and West Coast. Now, the question is, how do you get that electricity there? You get that electricity through these massive power lines. Now, the question is that the you lose power on these power lines with every mile. Every mile it gets reduced. If you have something in New Mexico and it's going all the way to Chicago, by the time it gets to Chicago, it becomes incredibly inefficient and incredibly expensive. But the question is, how does it get there? It gets there because you have to enforce eminent domain along the way. Now, you're going to take the path of least resistance and go straight. Now, if you go straight from the generating plant to Chicago, that means you're going to have literally hundreds of billions of dollars of housing, of property confiscations, etc., just to get there. And the result will be impoverishing the people in that area because they will not be able to afford the electricity as they're able to afford now. Now, if that's going green and creating jobs, I have a problem with that. And folks, I think we have a problem. It's 8 minutes after the hour, and Mike hasn't called in yet. And let's see if we can get somebody on the line. Hold on, please. I'm going to give you a phone number, okay? Here, I'm going to get him on the phone here. And if we can, let's see if we can call him. Dun, 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 dun. Here we go. Aaron? All right, folks, please hold on. I know this is very, very unusual. And we do not have him on the line. Mike Rivero, here he is. Very good.
Being late.
Hello.
We'll blame it on the dog.
Mike?
Yes.
Mike, okay, Mike, all right, you're here. I was just looking for your number, trying to determine if you were getting on the air with us this evening. I was just talking about you.
Yes, I am. I apologize for being late. I was sort of, I was occupied with something else, and time got away from me.
All right, well, I diverted the conversation just for a moment, and I was talking about the nuances of this green energy plan that President Obama has in store. And I was just espousing some of the glitches in that program and how we can easily impoverish a nation by attempting to force people to use power that is very uneconomical, especially when eminent domain has to come into effect by laying power lines across the United States to get it from New Mexico to Chicago. But we won't go there right now. I am so happy to have you on the line. You are one of my radio heroes. You are absolutely terrific. I told my listeners that you are one of the most dynamic radio talk show hosts on the air. You are very articulate, and you bring everything right clear, right to the point. And I really enjoy listening. In fact, I have your picture on my few computer screens that I have in front of me. You're on one of them now.
What did your computer ever do to you? I mean, really? Come on. That's computer abuse. That's monitor abuse.
What's that? I'm sorry?
I said that's monitor abuse.
Well, I was listening to your conversation with Alex Jones.
Yes.
On May 5th. Anyway, what I was going to ask you, because I know you do broadcast 6 times a week, and God bless you, I don't know how you do that, but what is the latest hot button right now, Mike?
Well, the latest hot button for me, and I would expect it to be for most Americans, of course, is the ongoing revelations about the use of torture by our government. It wasn't just a few bad apples or a couple of low-down people who got, you know, lower-level people who got carried away. This is a systemic policy decision to engage in war crimes against people, against prisoners. And what's really very interesting, of course, the government and the media attempted to sell this to people with the 24 scenario. There's a nuclear bomb hidden in a city. We've got the guy who planted it. We've only got 24 hours to disarm it. Right. Therefore, it's okay, excuse me, for us to torture him to get that information. And
right.
It sounds really good, but it's a plot from a TV show. It doesn't really happen in real life. It hasn't happened in real life. And we find out these Justice Department memos that supposedly say it's okay to torture people actually specifically said only in this circumstance of protecting Americans from dire immediate danger. Now we're finding out, of course, that nobody was hiding a nuclear bomb or anything. We're finding out that prisoners were being tortured to confess things that were politically convenient for Bush and Cheney. For example, the claim that Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein were in cahoots was the result of a confession extracted under torture. And that was pretty much the only basis they had for invading Iraq. And, of course, the Justice Department torture memos did not cover that particular application. So even those Justice Department memos don't really make the use of torture legal in that circumstance. Not when you're using it to extract confessions to bolster a complete hoax and a lie about what's going on. We're finding out now that some 40% of the official 9/11 Commission report was based on these coerced confessions as well. And it's just, this should be outraging Americans, not only because we're not supposed to be a country that tortures, but they're committing these war crimes in our name. And the bottom line is, I mean, getting away from Condi Rice and getting away from when Nancy Pelosi knew anything, the bottom line is this is underscoring the fact that the entire Iraq war was based on a lie. There were no weapons of mass destruction. There was no link between Saddam and Al-Qaeda. We don't even really know who Al-Qaeda is, because every time they bust one of them, it turns out to be some CIA or Mossad operative with a towel on it.
That's right.
I'm a terrorist. Look at me.
Yeah.
And now, of course, we're finding out that, you know, Saddam had nothing to do with 9/11. And so I'm wondering why we're not hearing the families and loved ones of all of those young Americans in uniform who were killed and crippled in this war based on lies. Why aren't they angry? Are they still in shock? Are they on drugs? Why aren't they furious at what has been done to their family members?
Yeah, I agree, Mike. What I can't understand is the mentality, and maybe the mentality is a result of the dumbing of America. Because anytime you speak negatively about the government to someone who is relatively unaware, they become very resistant to that remark. In fact, they will shut you down and they'll reject you immediately instead of saying, what are you talking about? Tell me more. I didn't know this. And it seems it started many years ago. This torture is, the way I see it, and I'm sure the way you see it, is just another step. It's that little small step that we take. Well, we're only going to torture it a few times in special cases. Well, then, and it grows and grows, and eventually we torture anyway, and we can become accustomed to it. At first, with just the mention of torture, you know, would have been revolting to the public. Now, torture is kind of has an air of respectability to it, you know, because, you know, we torture just the right way. We torture humanely, so to speak, and we actually paint this picture, and we have the dumbing of America, the average American saying, well, I guess that's right. Jeez, we're doing a good job. We're not like those Russians. In fact, Mike, I read an article from Pravda that was translated into English, and if reading that article, and it talked about what Obama is doing to this country, and if you read that article, you would think that, and if you took Russia out and put the United States in there, you know, the just switch names in that article, you would think that was written in the United States about Russia. And they talked about, in this article, they talked about the United States march to Marxism and how it will be their downfall in the Pravda magazine, in Pravda newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And yet people are not awake to that.
Yeah, first of all, you know, I think Americans have had to come to grips with the fact that our country is not what we thought it was. those people out there where you start to talk about this stuff and they get all defensive, these are the people who've been going along and going along and going along, and they went along when it was Abu Ghraib and the prisoners being abused, and they kind of went along with it because they really didn't have the courage to stand up to the government and say, what you're doing is wrong, and I don't give you consent to do this. So now they're psychologically trapped. They can't go back. No matter what the government does, it has to be right, because if the government is wrong, they become wrong, and they don't really have the courage
right.
to deal with that.
Right.
And that's where fanaticism comes from.
Right.
Now, as far as what Kravda is saying about the United States, they're absolutely correct, with one exception. We're not becoming Marxists, we're becoming fascistic.
Right, exactly.
What I mean by that is under socialism, under communism, profit and loss are socialized across the entire population. Under fascism, those who make money are allowed to keep it. Profits are kept private. Only the losses are socialized across all the taxpayers.
Right.
That's what they had in Italy under Benito Mussolini.
Right.
That's what we have in the United States right now.
Right, exactly. And but yet, if you just mention the word fascism, people look at you it's incredible that they you would even use that word, because they only associate fascism with World War II and Mussolini.
Well, that's true, but you know, even Mussolini said that fascism really ought to be called corporatism.
That's right.
Because fascism is what happens when business and government unite together to exploit the working people.
Yeah, Mike, let me ask you a question. And this is one I ask many of the my guests that call in who have talk shows and whatever, and are freedom fighters, and I've had dozens as you have on your program. I know of hundreds upon hundreds of people who have dedicated their lives to moving this country over to be a free country, and they've risked their lives and their reputations and their money, and probably all of their money and all the money they'll ever have to this cause. And I see this coming, but and there are so many, and there are thousands of organizations out there. And it seems that it is so splintered. How do we get all of these organizations, your radio program, for example, my radio, everyone, I mean, all of them, the thousands and thousands, under one sort of umbrella, one big movement, so that we could all march to the same tune, so we become a force to be reckoned with? Do you have any thoughts on that? Or maybe that's a bad idea.
Well, I think it's a bad idea, because if you have a single leader or small group of leaders, they become the target, and the government comes and shuts them down. And history has shown repeatedly that leaderless resistance is really the best way to go, because the government can never find a single one- or two-person group that they can take out to shut it all down. And it really does work the best. And I think as long as we are 1,000 independent voices saying that what the government is doing wrong is wrong, they're not going to be able to shut us all down, because we're all acting independently. And, if something happens to me, and yes, a lot of people, they've had their lives threatened, they've had their careers ruined, and the money situation, it gets very, very, very tight when you've got so many people calling your clients and saying, oh, you don't want to talk to him, he's a crazy, dirty, filthy anti-Semite kind of stuff going on.
Right.
But if we're all continuing to operate and function independently, it becomes much, much more difficult for the federal government to try and shut us down.
Yeah. Why do we show up so miserably at the polls? I mean, when there is an independent candidate who's maybe a Ron Paul, a supporter, for example, or has libertarian leanings, freedom leanings, they wind up getting 1.3%, 2%, and I often wonder, where are all these people? Why are they still voting for the Republicans and the Democrats, and why are they staying home when they have an option?
Well, I don't think that I don't think the elections are accurately reflecting the will of the people. Personally, I think Ron Paul won the New Hampshire primary because going into the primary, he was ahead of Hillary Clinton. And then all of a sudden, at the last second, I'm confusing my parties there. But in New Hampshire, I think is where Ron Paul lost his momentum. And I do believe that it was stolen. We know there was a lot of skullduggery up there in New Hampshire. Black box voting has been up there. We know that we have seen time and time again, you'll be going into a primary or an election, and they'll say, well, the pre-election polling is showing XYZ person is ahead. And then all of a sudden, you know, in the middle of the night, the numbers will reverse. And the next day they'll say, well, it was a surprise upset. And the guy that nobody thought was going to win has won.
Yeah.
And if you've ever seen that HBO documentary, Hacking Democracy, it is absolutely an eye-opener. You've got to see that. I really do believe the biggest problem in this country is that we have not had honest, fair, and accurate elections for probably going back at least 20, 30 years.
Well, you know, we haven't had honest elections. The people in office are all with the, you know, the big corporations. They're all purchased politicians. We can't trust them worth a damn. Anything that they say out of their mouths is never what they mean or what's going to happen. We can't trust them at all. The news media is only reporting what they're allowed to report. It seems that It is amazing that how the cards are stacked against the average Joe Blow, who just works during the day, comes home and watches television in the evening. I mean, this poor guy doesn't stand a chance.
That's absolutely correct. I mean, you know, there's an establishment elite that go to the best schools on the East. They belong to all the secret fraternities. They're raised from birth to take over the reins of control of the government. And anybody who's coming in from the outside, like Ron Paul, they're facing an uphill fight. The campaign election laws in this country are set up to favor the two traditional parties. For example, if you are a candidate for either Republican or Democratic president, for example, you're automatically on the ballot in all 50 states.
Yeah.
If you're an independent third-party candidate, you have to mount a petition drive in all 50 states
right.
to get on the ballot. And that just basically soaks up so much of your volunteer and financial resources.
I know.
You know, you can be bankrupt before the main campaign even begins.
Yeah, we did this in Oklahoma, and we were absolutely exhausted by the time the election came. We had no more steam left, and we didn't get on the ballot. You know, and we lost anyway. It was absolutely amazing. We have an initiative, a ballot initiative now in the Oklahoma Congress, and we thought it was going well. Everything was going well, and all of a sudden it got stopped again, and it just keeps on getting stopped. Committee after committee, it seems like it's never ending, Mike. Well, Mike, let me just stop for a second for late station identification. Folks, this is Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. It's my pleasure to have Mike Rivero this evening as our guest, and we're talking about everything and anything. So please call in 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. Mike, you'll notice we don't have any advertisements on this program because this is all paid for by me.
Okay.
So you don't have to wait. There will be no respite in this program. We go through the whole hour. Another concern that I have, and I have had, but I know basically little about it, I have to admit, I should be well-schooled in this, being in the business that I'm in, and that is the forces presently to bring the Internet under some sort of government control or restriction. And could you give us a readout on that and what you know about that at this time?
Well, obviously, the entrenched powers, the government, the corporate media, certainly Israel, are very concerned about the Internet because it is a means of mass communication that exists outside governmental control.
Correct.
And basically, the Internet, the blogosphere, the alternative media, is changing the fundamental nature of the way information flows through society. It is as revolutionary a change as the invention of movable type printing, which allowed very inexpensive books to start flowing into the middle classes of Europe.
Right.
And it provoked all kinds of crisis, led to the King James Bible, because all the various regional churches had altered the Bible to suit their own particular agendas.
Right.
And as people were able to buy Bibles and find out for themselves what was going on, they began to see where they'd been deceived and where all of that was happening. And so there even back then, during Gutenberg's day, there was talk about, how do we get this under control? How do we shut it down? How do we burn the heretics? And the reality is that those institutions institutions that were able to evolve to adapt to the new reality, they survived. And those institutions that could not, such as hereditary rule, pretty much went extinct. And, you know, over the course of the intervening centuries, we've reached a society where the newspapers and corporate television radio media proclaim that they're free and they follow the First Amendment and they'll report on whatever, you know, you're supposed to know. And the reality, as we've learned in recent months especially, is no, they don't. They report what the government tells them to report. They report what their various corporate masters want you to be thinking and looking at. And the really important stuff, you know, doesn't get reported at all. I mean, now we're sitting here, 2009, looking back and realizing, especially with the revelation that the one confession they had that linked Saddam Hussein with Al-Qaeda was extracted under torture. And just as reporters were about to go talk to this guy and say, did you really mean it? All of a sudden, he's committed suicide conveniently in prison. So we're looking at this, you know, situation where we know the U.S. government lied us into a pointless war of conquest that is not going very well. And together with that, the corporate media, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, Fox, all stood there shoulder to shoulder with George Bush, and they told the same lies in absolute Hitlerian lockstep. And so we, the people, know we've been lied to by this media. They're turning to alternatives. They're turning to blogs. They're turning to the alternative radio. And it's not going to be easy to get them back. Just shutting down the blogs and the alternative media isn't going to reverse the situation. People will find new ways to share information. The Soviet Union, the USSR, was brought down with a network of fax machines called the Samizdat.
Right.
And now that people know they're being lied to by the corporate media and by the government, they're not going to go back to getting their news off of the television set.
Right. I guess, you know, like you said, we're a splinter group. I guess we're all the Al-Qaedas of America, aren't we?
Well, I don't like that word because...
No, I don't like that either, but I mean, basically, basically that's what we're fighting, you know?
I have a reason. First of all, I think Al-Qaeda is a hoax. It's like Emmanuel Goldstein in 1984.
Right.
It's a made-up enemy for us to be afraid of because the literal translation of Al-Qaeda means the base. And it's thought to have come off of a filing cabinet at CIA Langley where they kept the database of the Mujahideen fighters, including Osama bin Laden, who had aided the United States against the Soviet Union in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Charlie Wilson's war, that whole thing. But in Arabic slang, Al-Qaeda means the toilet. And Arash Al-Qaeda means I'm going to the bathroom. Now, if you're forming a real terrorist group, are you going to call yourself the toilet?
Sounds okay to me.
I'm the toilet. I'm here to blow up your building. You know, and people start laughing.
The toilet brigade.
Oh, I kill you.
I didn't know that. Thank you for sharing that with us. That is terrific.
It's a joke. And they really, you know, it's almost insulting that the government thinks that we're going to fall for this stuff and we're going to believe this stuff.
Yeah.
And now, of course, more and more it's coming out. We just had another story coming out. The last batch of incriminating documents supported the idea that Iran is trying to build nuclear bombs. That's just been exposed as another hoax, another fraud. And it is. It's all planted information. It's all made up. They're trying to manufacture a reason for us to invade a country that hasn't invaded anybody in 200 years.
You know, the Federal Reserve has got to print enough money to keep the military-industrial complex going. So we not only pay for the military-industrial complex, but we pay for the interest on the notes that are coming out of the Federal Reserve. In other words, we're getting hit. We got a double whammy there. They're making a fortune. They love it. The more war, the happier they are, and the more we become impoverished and the worse things get. It's wonderful. It's a great system. We're on the wrong end of it, unfortunately.
Well, it's a triple whammy. It's a triple whammy because as they're pouring out all this extra money, it drives prices up. We start getting
hit
with hyperinflation. So
that's
we get a triple whammy on this.
Right. You know, I tell those people who resist the thought of government media, they really feel that it's separate. I say, just look. All you have to do is go back and look at the presidential debates and look at each one of them. They're all on different channels. Every one was on a different station and whatever, you know, owned by supposedly different people. And they lined up the people exactly the same way. With Obama and, for example, Obama and Hillary Clinton, dead center. I said, now, if it was truly independent and they weren't being influenced outside by whomever they're being influenced by, the government or whatever. I said, then you would have figured one station would say, well, we'll line them up by height. We'll line them up by age or by, whatever, by last name, you know, ABC, all the way down alphabetically. But in other words, there would be some sort of variety, any sort of variety at all. I said there was absolutely none. Ron Paul was on one end for the Republicans, and then Mike Gravel, who I also know, for the Democrats, was on the other end for the Democrats. And who were the guys that considered, you know, nutcakes? You know, Ron Paul and Mike Gravel. And those are the only two speaking the truth. And I just say, if you just look at that, you have to answer that question for me. How do they all line up? What's the probability of them having, what, 20 debates and lined up exactly the same way at each one? Statistically, it's impossible, unless it was prearranged.
Well, it really is. I mean, I think the idea is they figure the front runners get the center stage, and, you know, all that does is reinforce the idea that they're front runners. But we know that U.S. government propaganda experts from the Pentagon have been working in the actual newsrooms of TV news network, like CNN.
Right.
That's openly been admitted
right.
to. That
right.
their newsroom has people there from the Pentagon to make sure that the propaganda is correct and that they're telling the story the U.S. government wants the people to be told.
Right. Well, you know, also I was... what about... I'm kind of pleased that Glenn Beck is finally getting on board and Napolitano mm-hmm. is getting on board and those groups, at least... there are those who are almost all the way on the right track. At least Napolitano, I think, is. You know, Glenn Beck is mostly, and they've finally given some airtime to these guys.
Keith Olbermann over at MSNBC and Rachel Maddow, they're starting to report on the real stuff. They're a little bit late, but better late than never.
Well, Olbermann really, Olbermann, I thought, was doing a good job until Obama came and he drank the Obama juice. And it seemed that Obama could do no wrong. And I stopped listening to him altogether. But did he change? Because I haven't listened to him a long time.
You might want to turn him back on again. Because remember, during the election, I was favoring Obama over John McCain, slightly, marginally. I wanted Ron Paul as well. But when it was obvious Ron Paul wasn't going to win and we had to pick the lesser of two evils, you know, I supported Obama because I wanted to believe that he was going to be another candidate, that once he was in office, he was going to tell his supporters to take a flying leap, and he was going to do the job properly.
Right.
And, you know, we would get the change. Now, of course, I know better. I think Olbermann does, too, because Olbermann is definitely leading the charge on why isn't Obama prosecuting these torture.
Great.
These torture charges, because it's not an option under U.S. law. It's not an option.
That's right.
Mandatory.
Right.
And every day that Barack Obama does not bring charges against these people who authorized the torture and carried it out, the more like an accessory he looks. At the very least, he's guilty of obstruction of justice. That's impeachable.
Yeah. By the way, how is the economy where you are?
Well, it's pretty bad. I mean, you know, I think it's pretty bad all across the country. You know, we've got some of the smaller shopping centers have a 50% vacancy rate.
Yeah.
You know, unemployment is very, very high here. Our tourism is absolutely in meltdown mode here between the, you know, you've got people on the mainland of the U.S. don't have the money to come to Hawaii anymore. The rest of the world thinks we're the 21st century version of the Nazis, and they don't want to have anything to do with us at all.
Yeah.
And those people who do come here, they're treated like POWs by the airport security screeners, you know, coming in and out and coming out. I mean, they've done, you know, Hawaii Tourism Board has done a lot of surveys. People, why aren't you coming to Hawaii anymore? And they said, we don't want to get groped and fondled, you know, coming in and going out. I mean, these bozos wrecked a laptop of mine, which I'm never going to forgive them for.
Yeah.
And, you know, and now, of course, that we know there never really was a terrorist threat because they made it all up to sell us these wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. And you know how I know there never really was a terrorist threat? I mean, besides the fact that they're admitting now, yeah, we tortured these guys into saying there was a terrorist threat. You know, and that's really where all these false alarms came from. You know, there is a high probability of a terrorist threat. We're moving the color code from peach to taupe to mauve and whatever the color cycles were. And they were getting this all from a guy they were torturing, and the guy would just make up, you know, whatever he'd say, you know, yes, next Tuesday the flying saucer's going to come down, or Osama bin Laden's going to come out with the Loch Ness Monster, and they're going to debate the Statue of Liberty. So we all know it's a... But here's the other situation. The Department of Homeland Security ran their own tests on the TSA security people at the airport, and they found out that half the time the practice bombs got onto the airplane.
Wow.
Their planted phony pretend carrots could get the bombs on the airplane half the time. Harvard Business School did exactly the same thing. They found the same thing. The TSA screenings at the airport do not really make us safer. So if you are a real terrorist, and by that I mean not one of these CIA and Mossad bozos running around with a towel on their head trying to scare us all into going along with the war, but a real terrorist would accept a 50-50 chance of getting that bomb onto that airplane, and then if he got detected at the security gate, just blow up the security gate, because you still get the same result. People are terrified to go to the airport.
Right. Well, you
okay?
know,
now
yeah.
the fact that... Then let me finish this up,
sure,
and then
sorry.
I'll shut up and let you talk.
Go ahead. It's your hour. Yeah. Go ahead. Go for it.
No, but here's the thing. The fact that we're not seeing airplanes blown out of the air and we're not seeing security gates blown up in going on, what, 5 years?
Right.
Tells me that it's all a hoax. It's theater. It's dog and pony to trick the dumb Americans into thinking, ooh, the government really cares about me, so it's okay if they fondle my wife and daughter
right.
and put us through the scanner that lets them look at them naked.
Yeah. Well, Mike, I hate to travel. I never loved to travel. I used to travel a lot, and now whenever I have to go somewhere, I mean, that's my wife. I complain beforehand, while I'm there, and for at least 2 weeks afterwards. I just don't like to do that anymore. I don't like all the hassle and all the garbage you have to go through, because I agree with you, and it's a real pain. And then things never arrive on, the planes don't arrive on time, et cetera. So it's really not worth it. But, you know, here in every time I go to a mall today or to a shopping center with my wife, what I do is I walk around and I count what I call holes. That means the closed stores. I was at one that was at a pretty popular shopping area, and about half, by the way, probably about half, maybe about a third of the stores were already closed. I mean, there were like seven or eight what I call holes or empty stores. And I'm seeing more and more of those all over the country. Now, that's an indicator that people have less money. Thus, they're not buying. And even if they were buying, you can't spur the economy by buying. You have to produce something. You need some innovation. You need initiative. You need productivity. You need all those things. You don't need people to buy crap from China to spur the economy. And yet, this is what our president is espousing. And I don't think that's right, and I don't think it's going to do any good in the first place.
I absolutely agree with you. Everything that Obama is doing is a short-term patch it, make it look like it's good kind of a solution, but it really is not going to reverse the long-term trend. He's doing a lot of speechifying, but that's not going to fix things. You're absolutely correct. The problem with our economy is we let our manufacturing go, and we're not in a position to easily get it back, and nobody wants to take the time to get it back because it's going to take longer than the next incoming election. So the politicians are looking for anything that they can point to that looks good now so that they can get reelected. And the long-term fixes are just, you know, they're not being looked at all. But the basic problem, and this goes back to the Harvard Business School at the end of World War II and scientific management and the MBA program. We trained a generation of mid-level managers with this idea that what your company is making isn't all that important because you're all following the same management tools. And you can go from company to company to company and still do your management job, whether that company is doing rear-view mirrors or cosmetics or pharmaceuticals the week after that. And so we created a generation of executives, and they're now in the boardrooms with no respect for the products being made anymore. And out of this came this idea of, well, you know, since manufacturing isn't all that big a deal anyway, let's send it to other countries.
Right.
And just lost touch with the fact that your employees are also your customers.
Right.
And, you know, coupled with tax credits from the U.S. government that made it financially attractive to move more jobs overseas, it's an absolute disaster. They've collapsed the foundation of the entire economy.
Yeah. Yeah, we had to become an economy of finance and services. And finance is hocus-pocus stuff. I mean, the finance means absolutely nothing. And I have, by the way, Mike, I wanted to mention to you, which I forgot, In the studio with me this evening is my wife, Erin, and she would like to ask you a question. Her name is Erin. Hold on, please.
Mike, what do you feel is the long-term goal of entirely changing the economy? If we do have the government behind it all in terms of a plan, go ahead.
Well, there's a couple of schools of thought on that. I know there are a lot of people who are saying that the government is deliberately crashing the economy in order to bring about a global government, global economy system. I don't know how good that is because everybody sees globalism as the problem, and selling more globalism as the solution is going to be pretty tough. There's another school of thought. This is kind of the one that I favor, and that is that the government understands they really can't fix the U.S. economy. It's going to crash. And so all they're doing is limping it along while they loot as much as they can out of it to put in their own pocket. And the third possibility is simply that there is so much entrenched greed and power that nobody can change the path of the economy, and it's going to crash anyway no matter what anybody does.
Well, you know, when you mentioned that to the man on the street, You know what kind of answer you get? Because I've discussed this with so many people, and they say, well, I don't have much now. I guess I don't have much to lose. And that's the answer. I go, no, you've got a lot to lose. And because most people they don't have savings anymore. When I was young, I mean, everyone had a passbook. I remember when I was a kid, my mother said, you got a passbook? And I put my pennies in the savings. I remember I used to go Dollar Savings and Loan Association, and I used to put money weekly. I had to put money in the account. And I used to get my little passbook, and they used to type the stuff in there with the interest, and I get all excited that I had, $12.40 in there. And we don't do that anymore, Mike. We don't do anything like that anymore. I mean, it's incredible. We have no saving. My son, who has an MBA, and he's a chemical, chemical engineer. I mean, that's the toughest engineering degree to get. I mean, when it comes to finance and personal finance, I mean, the guy's not even in kindergarten. It's amazing. And he's got an MBA, and it drives me nuts. He just bought a house for $300,000-$400,000 in an expensive area. It's a mess. And yet they have no savings whatsoever. It's just amazing.
Well, the reason for the decline in savings, when you and I were young, okay, the banks had to have a certain amount of deposited cash on hand in order to write loans.
Right.
They could still write loans for more money than they had on hand, but they had to have a minimum amount of actual money brought in as deposits from outside in order to allow them to write more loans. Over the years, those reserve requirements have eroded away. In fact, some of the larger banks have been given the nod by the Federal Reserve and by the Treasury Department. They're effectively functioning with no reserve requirements at all. They're just printing up the money as fast as they
right.
need to put it out there. So, of course, they're not going to encourage saving anymore because they don't need it in their bank. And if you're saving it and not spending it, they can't get their hands on it. So that's why the personal savings, the government will give lip service to it, but nobody really wants you to be saving any money. They want, if you reach a crisis, an emergency, they want you to borrow it from them at interest.
Yeah.
So that's the reason. And if you look at it now, if you start a savings account now and it's only got like a few dollars in it like us kids used to have, They'll just shut the account down after a while and take the money. I went through that with Bank of America when I was in high school. I had a savings account, and I had a little less than $100 in there. And then one day I actually needed the money, and I went to the bank, and they said, oh, no, we have a new rule. You know, savings accounts under $100 that aren't touched for 6 months, you know, we just close them and take them. And that was the last time I ever put a deposit in the bank other than my checking account.
My goodness, and they didn't even go back and get some money to look up what your balance was and give you a check for the balance.
No, I had my passbook, and they just said, no, the account doesn't exist anymore. If the account is inactive for 6 months and it's below a certain minimum, we just figure you've gone away and forgotten about it.
I have to open
that
a bank like that.
Quite a bit.
I like that, but I want to be on the receiving end of that one, Mike.
Yeah, well, the banks are set up to make the bankers rich.
Yeah. Well, I am real concerned that people are just hoping that something good will happen. Just like recently they say, well, things appear to be getting better. Things are not getting better. Things are getting worse.
No, they're not.
And I don't know exactly where we're headed, but it doesn't look like it's going to be very pretty. Unemployment, now I'm lucky, I'm in Tulsa, and it's a relatively small town of 300,000 people spread out pretty far. And it's, you know, mostly suburban and rural. But in the inner cities, now I'm from New York City. I'm an East Harlem boy. I sang doo-wop back in the 1950s. That tells you how old I am. There's very few of us alive, I'll tell you that. But, you know, I cannot imagine today living in the inner city, as I did back in the 1950s and 60s, the inner city, under the conditions we have now, with things becoming even worse, where unemployment starts getting out of hand and people start rationalizing their actions because they're broke. They have to do something to survive. And it's not going to be a pretty place to live. And I went through the race riots in New York, you know, back in the old days when they had the race riots. And I had back then I had police escorts sending me to my factory that I worked at the time as a kid. And actually, I went to work under police escort with shields and the whole bit, while the place was one of the total riot because I worked in Harlem, you know, on 123rd Street. Anyway, but I think it's going to be a very frightening thing to see. And I don't know exactly how we're going to handle all of this. I mean, I don't know how the government thinks they're going to handle all this stuff. I know gun sales are up tremendously all over the country. I assume they're up even where you are.
Yes, they are. Ammunition is—it's actually hard to find ammunition, and everybody's stockpiling. I personally don't think we're going to see a lot of shooting. I really do think that ultimately the U.S. government is going to collapse the way the USSR did. They are just as deeply, if not more so, in debt. They've lost the trust of the people. Okay, hello.
Yeah. You're still here.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I've been here.
Okay, I heard a voice saying I'm off the host queue.
Oh, okay. I heard a blip, that's all, but you're still with me.
All right, I'm still with you. Okay, but basically, I really do think that the U.S. government is going to collapse the way the USSR did. I am not encouraging anybody to be violent. On the other hand, you know, having a gun and some ammunition to just be prepared makes common sense. You know, I remember during the Los Angeles riots, the Rodney King situation, and you had, the rioters were out there with their guns, and they were shooting everything up, and law-abiding citizens, you know, because the LA police ran. They just split. They were gone. And so law-abiding citizens ran to the gun stores to get guns to protect their homes and businesses, and they ran right into the two-week waiting period.
Yeah.
And then as if that wasn't bad enough, the LA City Council banned all ammunition sales in Los Angeles County.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, paint a target on our forehead.
Yeah.
And, you know, make us all victims here.
Yeah.
Because, again, it was the absolute wrong thing to do. And I remember seeing this Korean owner of a store, you know, up on his roof with a legally owned assault rifle protecting the business he'd invested his entire life in without a cop to be seen anywhere. In my mind, this guy is a hero. They've tried to demonize him ever since. Saying, oh, it's vigilantism and stuff. You should leave these things to law enforcement. Great. Where were they?
Yeah.
And so I think people should have guns. But as far as our current situation, I think probably as early as next month, and if not somewhere in summer, between June and August, I think we're going to see a major economic crash, and I think it'll drag down the U.S. government with it.
Well, you know, according to the Global European Anticipation Bulletin, which I subscribe to, a friend of mine they say that in June we should see some sort of financial, you know, come to Jesus meeting, if you will. Because I think they say we will default in June of 2009. And the repercussions from that would be just ominous, you know, for the American citizens. We think we're disconnected to all of this high finance, but it's all connected. And when that stuff falters, it's going to affect it. And they say that there's going to be a bank holiday. And the next day when we get up, we're going to find that each dollar is only worth one-tenth of what it was worth the day before, and they have to trade in each, you know, $10 for every new $1. And they're predicting this to occur in 2009. While mainstream media is saying things are getting better, they anticipate that the recession will be over by the end of the year.
Well, you know, ABC last week came out with an article saying the recession is already over, retail is up, the housing market's rebounding. And then the very next day, the official figures came out, retail was continuing to decline, foreclosures were up. And so, yeah, the corporate media and the government are, you know, they talk about, a green shoot or a glimmer of hope. And
right.
when they're using language like that, you know it is USDA choice bovine excrement that they're shoveling at you.
Yeah. Mike, on your radio program, when people call in, what is the most common question that's asked of you? Is there any commonality in any of the questions that they ask, or are they all over?
They're kind of all over the place. A lot of people, they're asking, you know, what do we do? How do we get prepared? And obviously, be prepared for a serious disruption of your normal infrastructure. And if you want to call it an earthquake kit, which is what we called it in Southern California, now that we live away, it's a hurricane kit. But you got to have stored food, stored water, batteries, radio, all the stuff to deal with an emergency where you might not be able to get to the stores. The other advice I have is only have as much money in the bank as you need to pay your bills, and you should have the rest at home, some of it in gold, some of it in silver. And, have a firearm and have some bullets because, you know, things could get really, really dicey for a while there.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing how many people have taken heed to that. People that I would expected would not do that, and yet I have a friend of mine who's actually a retired fire marshal, and he actually took money out of his pension, which is something that you typically don't do when he just retired. And after he did that, he went to the coin store and he bought silver and gold. And he said, "No, I think I see this coming. I don't want to be held short." He said, "I'm not going to put all of it," but he says a good portion of it is going to be that way because I want to have something tangible when it hits the fan finally. And I was sort of proud of him that he took a very, very drastic step, you know, because that's, mm-hmm. you know, taking money out of your pension, lowering your pension is kind of low, you know, is a drastic step.
Well, the pension funds are starting to collapse along with
right.
the 401ks and now they're saying Social Security is going to be out of money by next year. They're blaming it on the economic downturn, but we know that the Social Security Trust Fund has been looted going back to the Clinton administration. And, the gold and silver coins, I mean, if nothing else, you can carry it in your pocket. You can use it to bribe your way through a checkpoint.
Right.
Gold coins, put them in a chain, let your wife wear them as jewelry, and, you get a little extra dividend on that investment.
Right. I've always been for years. I've always been skeptical, and I was buying. I didn't buy $1 million worth of this stuff, but a coin here and there for many, many years. I was buying gold and silver when buying gold and silver wasn't cool. You know, when
yeah.
people say, "What are you buying that stuff for?" I said, "Well, it's so cheap. You know, geez, you know, gold is down to $275 an ounce and all that. You know, I can afford to buy a couple of coins." And everyone
yeah.
thought I had totally lost my mind, you know. And now they go, now they say, "Boy, I wish I would have done that." And I said, "Well, you should do it now because when it goes up," I said, "then you're going to say, well, look how cheap it was when it was $900 an ounce, you know." So
yeah.
I think
yeah.
we're still in the ballpark of it being a very inexpensive. I get questions, you know, that challenge, for example, these programs that Barack Obama has of forcing our nation to go green and how it's going to rejuvenate America, it's going to create jobs, it's going to clean up the environment, and life is going to be great once again. And that's one question that I have to respond to on occasion. And Mike, I was just wondering, what type of response do you give to that?
Well, the problem is that a lot of the environmental agenda, and of course this is a major platform for the Democrats, and so it's the one area where he can actually try and do something to make it look like he's keeping his campaign promises. The issue, however, is that so much of the policy, for the green policy, the environmental policy, it's not well thought through. And a lot of it is really aimed at supporting this idea for a cap and credit tax system, which is going to make the people buying and selling those tax credits very, very rich. I mean, Al Gore and his investors, they've already become extraordinarily wealthy in Europe because they got a cap and credit tax system, carbon tax system put through in there. Now they're trying to ramrod it through the U.S. Congress. It's just another way to extract money from us just for being alive. And more than that, this global warming, global climate catastrophe is the doorstep by which they're going to try and sell a global government to us. You know, the Earth is all one Earth, and it's all in trouble because of you humans, and the only way to fix it is you must all agree that you will do whatever this global Earth-governing body,
right,
whatever the name is, they
right,
come up with it, tells you to do. And then once they have that established, that there is a global authority over the environment, over your electricity, over the cars you're driving, over the gas, it'll start to, as always, it will expand into other areas, where you can go, what you can do, how many miles you can drive, how many appliances you can have in your home, and just from there on, it will be the step toward a global governing system. And I'm adamantly opposed to global government because it means the end of any kind of societal evolution. You know, whenever I hear the phrase global government, I remember that's what Alexander the Great tried to do. That's what Napoleon tried to do. That's what Hitler tried to do. They all wanted global government. And
right,
the problem with global government is the people who are pushing for it are the very people we don't want to have in charge of a global government.
Right, exactly. Mike, we have about 2 minutes left on our program before we get knocked off the lines. And so I'd like to give this 2 minutes to you. If you would like to promote anything, promote your website, your radio program, any particular issue, go for it.
Well, okay, the website is whatreallyhappened.com. During weekdays, Monday through Friday, I have two radio shows now, 5 p.m. Central Time on the Genesis Communication Network and 7 p.m. on the Liberty News Radio Network. And I also have a Saturday show for GCN at 11 a.m. Central Time. As far as my advice to you, it's going to come right out of network. Now is the time to get angry. And I have to admit, I am very disappointed in the vast majority of Americans who are learning what the true nature of their government has been about, the torturing of innocent people to coerce a confession to justify sending your kids off to fight in a war for who knows what real purpose and for what instigator. Why are you not angry at what is being done, at being lied to, at being cheated, at being treated so shabbily? A government that lies to you on this scale is a government that has no respect for you whatsoever. And, you know, the government is operating so far outside the law, we can't really view it as a legitimate legal government of the United States anymore. They're just stealing your money. And you were talking about people are just saying, well, I don't have much to lose, so I don't have to worry about it. Folks, in the last 6 months, the U.S. government has added $100,000 to every taxpayer's eventual tax debt, money that you'll pay, you will get nothing for.
Right. Right. It's a shame that our children's children, actually are going to be born as basically slaves to the government because they're going to owe that much. Just the day they were born. So that's taxation without representation.
It's slavery.
Yeah. Mike, I want to thank you so much for being our guest this evening. It's been a great conversation. I'm a real fan of yours. You're doing tremendous work. I don't know how you do it as much as you do. But you're making a tremendous contribution, and I feel really honored that you called in and were our guest this evening. This afternoon for you, but this evening to us.
Okay, well, it was my pleasure, and I look forward to doing it again, and I promise I won't be late the next time.
Mike, if you would email me your T-shirt size and a mailing address, send it to comments@libertytalkradio.com. I'll send you a Liberty mm-hmm. Talk Radio T-shirt, okay?
All right, thank you very much. I will wear it proudly.
Okay, thank you so much, Mike, and good night.
All right, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Wow, really enjoyed him. We didn't get one caller in here. I can't believe it, guys. What's the matter with you? Jeez. Not one call. I guess they were too busy listening. I know sometimes people say, I don't call in because I was listening and I didn't want to interrupt the conversation. I hope that was the case. This is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Grant Jacobs Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, "Don't steal, the government hates competition." With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well, stay tuned.